And today we're reading from Shemot Bavit Tam, 10:34, chapter 1, genealogical table of the daughters of Manu, text 4.
Sarve
Come on, we should pray, we should say, 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 the verse again. That's the way we shall such a Krishna Yagyas Rupu. Yasri Sadakshina Mute Amshatu Kaya Pai. Of the two children born of Prakriti, the male child was directly an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his name was Yagya, which is another name of Lord Vishnu. The female child was a partial incarnation of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu. So, in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing the description of the daughters of Manu, specifically Akuti. And today it's described that Akuti had a son and daughter who were, one was directly an incarnation of Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the other was a partial incarnation of Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. So made me think of Swami and Gokul, but not quite. So the incarnations of Krishna described here Amsha and Bhuta being a plenary expansion. So I thought today we could discuss a little about all the expansions of Krishna, amshas. So there's a famous verse, the defining verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, explaining what it's all about, is in first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Svayam, Indrari Vyakyam Lokan, Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. So, all of the incarnations are either direct expansions of Krishna, or indirectly, the expansions of Krishna. So the example is given of the candle, that you light one candle, the power goes out, and then from that other candle you can light more candles, but there's one, so they all have the same shining power, but there was one original candle, so that's Krishna. Krishna is the original source of all incarnations of Godhead. So also we know from Brahma Samhita that Advaitam Achyutam Nadim Ananta Rupam, Krishna has unlimited forms, and they've just expanded unlimitedly, of course. And it's described in Nectar of Devotion that, like, you go to the beach and the waves are coming and coming, so the incarnations of Krishna are coming and coming again and again, without limit. So many of them, so for example, in the mystic yoga system, there's one power that yogis can have is to expand themselves. But they can only expand themselves, there's Sobhuru Rishi, he expanded himself into eight forms. And from memory, I think in Bhagavatam it describes they can at most expand himself into nine forms, but maybe it's only eight. So, but the difference is that when a yogi expands himself into eight forms, they're all the same form, they're not different personalities. But when Narada Muni was in Dwarka, then he went to Krishna's palace where he was married to 16,108 wives, and he was really astonished because in every palace there was a different form of Krishna, different expansion of Krishna, all doing different activities. And Krishna was, you know, playing with his children and doing household work in another palace. Another palace, he would be speaking with his particular wife or playing games. And so in every palace, he was a different personality expanded. But the yogis can only be doing the same thing in all of their eight expansions. So this is, of course, Krishna is Yogeshwara, so he gives these yogis their mystic power. But not to the same. No one can be equal to or higher than Krishna. And also Narayana Muni, he is also a pure devotee. A pure devotee also has all mystic powers as well, though they don't really care to show them. So Narayana Muni knew that, knew the trick of expanding himself into eight forms if he wanted to. So this is that. So even he was astonished that Krishna could expand himself into these 16,000 forms, because he knew how to do that, expand himself into eight forms, but he couldn't believe that someone could expand himself the way Krishna did. But still, all of these forms, Advaitam, there's no difference between all the forms of Krishna. We can see that there's, starting from Lord Balaram, the first expansion of Krishna, and the Chaturvyuha, and two sets of Chaturvyuha, Mahavishnu and Purusha avatars. So all these are expansions of Krishna, but they're all, I can't say that none of them are not Krishna. Or the Lila avatars, Matsya, Kurma, they're all still Krishna. The one person. So this is the science of God. One aspect of the science of God. And this was taught to Lord Chaitanya, to Sanat Goswami. And Prabhupada writes that from the instructions of Lord Chaitanya to Sanat Goswami, we can understand the science of God as it relates to God's transcendental form, his opulences, and his devotional service. So it's a great, and elsewhere Prabhupada writes that, we can either be too much, speculative and analytical in our study of spirituality, or we can be at the other end, can be too sentimental and not have a sound philosophical understanding. So this is, both things are required, but a balance between the two. And if we're too far to either end, either we're too overly philosophical, analytical, kind of like a jnani in our study of Bhagavatam, or if we're overly sentimental and we don't really understand Bhagavatam very deeply, or Bhagavad Gita, then Prabhupada says we won't get the result of devotional service, we won't actually develop our love for Krishna. Either if we're sentimental, we'll just be like the Sahajiyas, dreaming that we're associates of Krishna, and dressing up as gopis or something. Or we'll become too dry and just, in our study of Bhagavatam, learn lots of pastimes, learn lots of shlokas, but not actually reach the point of Bhagavatam, which is to develop our, awaken our love for Krishna, dormant love for Krishna. So Prabhupada explains that, needs to be the balance. So today we're getting a little bit more of the philosophical understanding of Krishna's incarnations. And so always the word, the Sanskrit word is avatar, not the Pahasha. We have, I find it actually really amazing, the names that some of the Indian names can get, the core names of Krishna. Lots of interesting names. So Prabhupada said the definition of avatar is one who descends, and specifically one who descends from the spiritual world to this material world. We know that all the bogus people who claim themselves as Krishna are not descended from the spiritual world. Well, they fell down a long time ago from the spiritual world. And they're rotting in this world and then somehow claiming themselves to be Krishna. So they didn't descend in the same way that the avatar descends. So this is maybe a favourite topic to memorise for new devotees, the six kinds of avatar. Have you learned the six kinds of avatar? Or incarnation? Okay. Haven't got that far in your study. So any other takers? The six kinds of incarnation or avatar of the Lord. Yes, I think you got all of them. So just to
maybe repeat it. So
repeat, on the internet radio. There's the Purusha avatars, the Vishnu incarnations, Mahavishnu or Kare Daksha Vishnu. Paramatma is Shivaraksha Vishnu, and in between that and this one, Gavaraksha Vishnu, who's incarnated in each and every universe. So there are Purusha incarnations, Leela avatars, many will discuss a bit more about Leela avatars, Guna avatars, qualitative incarnations of the Lord. As incarnations of the three controllers of the three modes of material nature, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And then we have the Manvantara avatars. So this chapter is describing the daughters of Manu. So in each day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, which I think comes to 5,040 per. There's 14 in a day, in a lifetime or a year of the month, I can't remember. And then we have Yuga avatars and Shaktavesh avatars. So, it's a nice one to memorize if you're newer devotees. A good refresher as well. In that same chapter as the chapter 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a list of that verse comes at the end of a whole list of incarnations. So, Shukadeva, all the incarnations are described in that list, and this incarnation of Krishna, described in today's verse, is found in that list, Yajna. So, Yajna, in teachings of Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada, says it is, Yajna is the, let's see, the, in Bhagavatam is the 7th. But Prabhupada gives us the 5th here, so some difference there. But anyway, so Yajna is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 3rd chapter. I'll just read that verse. It Tasatama Apuja Ruja Yajno Ya Yajayata Sayamajai Suragane Apasayam Bhuvantaram. The seventh incarnation was Yajna, the son of Prajapati Ruchi and his wife Bhakriti, what we're reading today. He controlled the period during the change of the Svayambhuvamanu and was assisted by demigods such as his son Yama. So we have some further information about the incarnation of Yajna, that he was controlling the period when during the change of Svayambhuvamanu, so going from one manu to the next. After Svayambhuvamanu, I'm not sure who the next manu was, currently I don't know, the seventh manu. So because there's 14 manus in one day of Brahma, that means we're kind of halfway through Lord Brahma's day, which means he's about 50 years old. So during that changeover from one manu to the second manu, then Yajna, the incarnation of Krishna, was controlling. And also it states that he was assisted by demigods such as his son, Yama, Yamaraj. So, well, it's actually interesting purport, so I'll just read some of this purport. The administrative posts occupied by the demigods for maintaining the regulations of the material world are offered to the highly elevated, pious living beings. When there is a scarcity of such pious living beings, as you might find today in Kalimita, then the Lord incarnates himself as Brahma, Prajapati, Indra, etc., and takes up the charge. During the period of Svayambhuvamanu, the present period is of Vajrasattva, there was no suitable living being who could occupy the post of Indra, the king of Indraloka, heaven, planet. The Lord himself at that time became Indra. So Prabhupada saying that Yajna became the god of heaven, Indra. And that's how he was controlling the universe from Indraloka, which is the Brahmaloka is the top of his planet, but the controlling demigod is Indraloka. So, and assisted by his own sons like Yama and other demigods, Lord Yajna ruled the administration of the universal affairs. So it's a little bit of extra information about Yajna, one of Krishna's incarnations. So they're not, all these incarnations, they have their functions and personalities within the universe. And of course the main reason they incarnate is to give pleasure to the devotees. That is Krishna's main business, is to please his devotees. And then there's, so in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, if you want to know anything about incarnations, then definitely read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. First, maybe chapters 5 to 7 or 8. It's a lot of information. Heaps. Especially if you look at, I get a bit bewildered by the technical information. You know, the 24 manifestations of Lord Narayana. Can you remember this kind of information? Yes. So Lord Vishnu, in his Narayana feature, holds the mace, or the club, the disc, so these two weapons for destroying the demons. Also holds the lotus and the conch, yes, maybe. Conch. So these two are for blessing the devotees. So these four items are held in different, you could say, permutations. So, and Prabhupada describes, if you see Lord Vishnu with these four arms, and you start from the lower left, looking at Krishna, I guess. So Krishna's left. And then going to the upper left and across to the upper right and down to the lower right. So these four, they're held in different combinations. Then you get the 24 varieties of manifestation of Lord Narayana. And they've all got different names, like Govinda and Padmanabha, etc. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe there's some devotees who are really, really studious and have memorized all of them, but I'd be surprised. yeah, have to have maybe a very mathematical mind to understand. But it's interesting, because there's such a wealth of information about Krishna, like as I was saying, the science of Krishna, and it's just not available in any other spiritual tradition. It's like, yeah, God sitting on a cloud and playing his harp, and that's his one eternal leader, to play the harp. And maybe strike down sinners. So anyway, in this chapter of teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 5, how to approach God. So that list of incarnations is given, quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada describes interesting information here. Because almost all of these 25 Leela avatars appear in one day of the month, which is called a Kalpa, they are sometimes called Kalpa avatars. Out of these, the incarnation of Hamsa, the swan, and Mohini are not permanent, but Kapila, who we just read about in Canto 3, Dattatreya, Rishabh, who comes in Canto 5, Dhanvantari, who inaugurated or established the science of Ayurveda, and Vyas. So these five are five eternal forms. Kapila, Dattatreya, Rishabh, Dhanvantari, and Vyas are five eternal forms. And they are more celebrated. The incarnations of the tortoise, Homa, the fish, Matsya, Narayanayan, Varaha, Payashisha, Krishnigama, and Balaram are considered to be incarnations of Vaibhava. I was asking one of you yesterday, what is Vaibhava? We have these terms, Vaibhava and Prakash. And this devotee said, Vaibhava means opulence. And in another section, Prabhupada said that the Vaibhava forms are the four-handed forms. So of course, if someone has four hands, then they're more opulent. Similarly, there are three guna avatars, or incarnations of the quality of the modes of nature, and these are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of the Manvantara avatars, which is what we're reading about, the Swayam Rupa Manu, there are 14. The Swayam Rupa Manu is not in this list. So one is Yajna, Vibhu, Satyasena, Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, Vamana, Sarvabhauma, Vishab, Vishvaksena, Dhammasetu, Sudhama, Yogeshwa, and Vihadvanu. So, out of these 14 Manvantara avatars, Yajna and Vamana are also Lila avatars, and the rest are Manvantara avatars. So, this Akuti's son, Yajna, he is a Manvantara avatar and also a Lila avatar, so he's two kinds of avatars. And there's some interesting information about the Yuga avatars. So before you advertise, I've also described to you Srimad Bhagavatam in the Satya Yuga. So one Yuga avatar, of course, appears in each Yuga. In the Satya Yuga, the incarnation of God is white. In the Treta Yuga, he is red. In the Dwapara Yuga, he is blackish, that's Krishna. And in the Kali Yuga, he is also blackish, but sometimes, in a special Kali Yuga, his Kali, his colour, is yellowish, as in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As far as the Shakta Vaishya avatars are concerned, they include Kapila and Rishabh, Ananta, Brahma, sometimes the Lord himself becomes Brahma, Chatushana, the incarnation of knowledge, Narada, the incarnation of devotional service, King Prithu, who we'll read about later in this canto. King Prithu is the incarnation of administrative power, and Parashuram, the incarnation who subdues evil principles. So, usually we would have an incarnation, a Yuga avatar who is blackish in this Kali Yuga. But because it's the Kali Yuga, just started. So there's one, Krishna appears once in a day of Brahma. And one of Lord Brahma's days is 1,000 cycles, Divya Yugas, 1,000 cycles of the four Yugas together. So out of 1,000 Divya Yugas, Krishna only comes in one of them. So that's not very many. And then, so of course, Lord Chaitanya only appears once in a day of Brahma as well. So I also remember when I hear Bhanu Maharaj describing this, that how fortunate we are that, you know, because we could have been born in any of the other 1,050 Yugas, but somehow we've taken another birth in this this Divya Yuga, the one where Krishna appeared, and so Lord Chaitanya also appeared. So we miss out on Krishna. I think one devotee kind of says, he's telling me how maybe when Krishna appeared we were like grass or something in such a way or something. We went into a human form of life. So this verse also explains that the female child was a partial incarnation of Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. So their name is Dakshina. Their name is not given in the translation. So as Brahma Sangeeta says that Lakshmi is a Sahasrara Sambrahma Sethimana. Lord Krishna is served by countless Lakshmis, millions upon millions of Lakshmis. And there's also discussion in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya was travelling in South India. He met one devotee from the Sri Sampradaya. Sri Sampradaya generally worship Lord Narayan. So this devotee's name was Venkatabhata. And Lord Chaitanya had this discussion with him about why does Lakshmi Devi want to, and why does she do austerity to join Krishna's pastimes? And Venkatabhata said, I cannot understand his dealings with Krishna. And so Lord Chaitanya was making the point that Lord Krishna is superior, you know, of course, relatively in the Lord Krishna is superior to Lord Narayan. But of course, Krishna, everyone worships Krishna according to their inclination. So Lord Krishna didn't want to upset this devotee by saying that Krishna was better than Narayan. So he said to this devotee that, don't worry, like,
It's actually offensive to consider all the, any of the forms of Krishna as different. It's offensive to, you know, make a distinction that this Krishna is better than that Krishna, because they're all Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But it is offensive, Prabhupada writes, to consider the demigods as equal or above Krishna. And then also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described that just as Krishna expands himself, then Srimati Radharani also expands herself into firstly the queens of Dwarka, and then into the goddesses of fortune in the Vaikuntha planets. So it's kind of a parallel expansion. And but not only that, Radha Krishna themselves are one, what Chaitanya explains. They are one, expanded into two to exchange mellows between each other. And so just as Krishna expands himself into so many forms, fishy forms and the six kinds of avatars that we discussed, then Srimati Radharani also expands herself into countless Lakshmis, goddesses of fortune. So we can't imagine, we really can't imagine at all the position of Radha and Krishna, who are the source of countless goddesses of fortune and Vishnu incarnations, and you know, all of these are contained within Krishna. Krishna is called the Avatari. All the incarnations reside in Krishna. And then it's said that Krishna never steps outside of Vrindavan, and so it's his Vasudeva feature incarnation who kills the demons in Mathura, etc. Nice discussion in that verse. Who knows verse 15:15? This is okay. Key memory verse. Anyone who's not an older devotee? You any newer devotees? Krishna? Do you know 15:15? You on the show as well? Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. It's a bit of a longer verse. Well done. So 15:15, as Krishna Guru said, Sarvasacharam Vidisani Vishwaru Matasvati Gyanam Bhagavadita Vedas Chasare Aham Eva Vejo Vedanti Kripvedi Eva Charam. So Prabhupada is explaining, describing about the Vedas being an incarnation of Krishna. So Krishna, he says, is worshipful not only as the impersonal Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the localized Paramatma, but as the form as of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. The Vedas give the right direction to people so that they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And Krishna, in his incarnation as Vyasadeva, is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the real understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas. And as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita, he is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. And there's a nice statement further on in the purport. So Prabhupada writes that not only does a living entity enjoy or suffer in this world according to the dictation from the Supreme Lord situated locally in the heart, so in other words all our activities are initiated by the super soul within, just like the children or people who are really good at something from a very young age. They're good at doing that, they're good at it in their last life. And Krishna is just reminding them of their activities. But also, not only does a living entity enjoy or suffer in his world, according to the dictation from the Supreme Lord, situated locally in the heart, but he receives the opportunity to understand the Vedas from him. If one is serious about understanding the Vedic knowledge, then Krishna gives the required intelligence. Why does he present Vedic knowledge for understanding? I like this sentence. Because a living entity individually needs to understand Krishna. So, we have all this knowledge, this information, Prabhupada's books, the process of devotional service and prasadam, lots of prasadam. So it's all there, presented for us very mercifully, and it's up to the individual jiva to take hold of that and grab hold of the lotus feet, the acharyas, and through them the lotus feet of Krishna. And individually, it's up to us to, you know, take advantage of all this that's being offered to us. And which is, you know, maybe not always easy to do. We struggle with our unwanted things in our heart, and matters, and so we get distracted by material goals. So gradually, as we apply the process more and more, then we understand more and more that we really do need. We're very much in a helpless condition. We really do need to take shelter of this process of devotional service and these books. And then this allows us to, you know, make more and more rapid advancement and become more and more fixed in devotional service and answers are removed. So I'll stop here and see if anyone has any comments or questions about avatars or anything else? Yes,
Doctor. Is it possible to spend a bit more time on Prabhupada before it? It's really amazing to me that Krishna not only incarnates as the Vedas, but incarnates as the Asadev to digest the Vedas, as Prabhupada says. He comes in an impossible way. To assist us.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the Vedas are the incarnation of Krishna, but also to get the essence of the Vedas, you're saying Vyasadev, an incarnation of Krishna, comes to give that essence. Is that what you're saying?
And Prabhupada understands that.
Yeah, and then of course the Acharya. Yeah. Also, I forgot to mention, there's also the word Vivinamsha, so the jivas themselves are expansions of Krishna, not incarnations, but expansions. Separated, Vina, expansions, separated from Krishna eternally. Thank you, Mati.
Thank you.
You had a question?
Are there any other avatars or expansions of Krishna that are close to him being, like, I think as Krishna has come to be the enjoyer, he does kill demons and give pleasure to his devotees, but he's enjoying. Do all his incarnations, is he an enjoyer? And is there anything, any Father of God in his enjoyment for himself.
What was the last part of that question?
So, I'm just wondering if he's always the enjoyer and at the centre of where he's enjoying or his kingdom demons, is he always enjoying? For example, and is there any other incarnation that's close to him as the Supreme Personality of God, as Krishna, that he enjoys as much in terms of pastimes?
Okay, so the question is, in all of Krishna's incarnations, is he always the enjoyer? And is there any other incarnation who enjoys in the same way or as much as Krishna? Kind of, that's more or less, yeah. Okay, so, yes, Krishna is always the enjoyer. Purusha, there's the Purusha and Prakriti. So the Prakriti is the nature, or the female aspect is the to be enjoyed by the Purusha. So that's us, the living entities. We're meant for Krishna's enjoyment. The enjoyment Krishna gets, the highest enjoyment that Krishna gets is from serving. So, you know, he becomes the servant of his devotees, but he's still enjoying them. And even in that, with those roles, for example, Krishna becomes the charioteer of Arjuna. One example. So even in that position, Krishna is the servant. Seems to be the servant, but the devotee still considers himself as the servant. The devotee never considers himself as the enjoyer. And so, you know, to give, you know, because Krishna wants to enjoy as a servant, then the devotee agrees that, okay, I don't want to take service from my master. But because this is giving pleasure to him, this is what he wants to do to give pleasure, then I will agree to act in that role. So, just like I heard a story this morning from Prabhupada that Krishna had a head. And, so, he said, no physicians can cure his head. Only the dust of my devotees can cure his headache. And so they went around to all the devotees and they, please give me the dust of your lotus feet. And the devotees were like, no, how can we do that? Like, how offensive, we'll go to hell for putting out dust from our feet on Krishna's head. And so then they came back to Krishna, the physicians, and Krishna said, go to Vrindavan. See the gopis, my friends there, and they will give their rest. So they went to see the gopis, and they heard that, oh, Krishna has a headache and he needs the dust of your feet. So they all quick, immediately, yes, please take the dust from my feet. And the physicians were astounded, like, oh, aren't you worried about going to hell? And they're like, no, if it's for Krishna's pleasure, then that's fine. So yeah, the devotee's position. They always want to just serve Krishna, and in any condition and within any whatever the consequences are for serving Krishna, they will accept that if that means Krishna is satisfied. And similarly with Prabhupada, that, you know, and our acharyas, they undergo so much austerity, and but not dry austerity. Their austerities are for the preaching mission and to spread Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada traveling every day, or not every day, every week from Vrindavan to Delhi to get his Bhakti Godhead published, and then residing in Vrindavan in Delhi in a small room. And writing for hours on end. A very austere lifestyle, but for the preaching mission. And accepting that austerity to please Krishna. Any other question? Does any other incarnation enjoy like Krishna does? I would say no, because Krishna is the fullest manifestation of God, in the sense that he exhibits the highest rasas, highest mellows of devotional service. There's no other incarnation exhibits, for example, the conjugal rasa, or in the same way that Krishna does. And like Bhanu Maharaj says, you don't really see, you can't really experience the conjugal rasa much with Lord Nishimide. It's a bit scary to be someone's lover. And yeah, so Krishna, of course, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. So, Krishna experiences the highest mellows, so but Krishna himself wanted to experience what Srimati Radharani was experiencing in her service to Krishna. And so that's why he came as Lord Chaitanya, to experience Radharani's mood of devotion service. And that is the highest enjoyment. So, although Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, then actually the devotee, who is the servant, enjoys more than Krishna. So Krishna wants to become in that role. Anyone else? Krishna probably was first.
Then in Hayushan, then Treta Yuga, then in Hayushan,
or Satya Treta Dwapara Yuga, and then in Hayushan.
What is the
question? The question is that in the creation, does it happen that we have such a Yuga, and then there's some period of annihilation, then we have Treta Yuga, and again some period of annihilation, then the next Yuga, so on and so on? Or does it happen that we have the four Yugas consecutively, Sata, Treta, Dwaka, and Kali, and then have some annihilation? So my limited understanding is that it's the latter, that we have the four Yugas, and at the end there's annihilation by another incarnation at the end of Kali Yuga. Which incarnation is that? Comes at the end of Kali Yuga. Kalki. Yeah. So Kalki comes and destroys all the demons, and then again another Satyuga starts. So that's only my limited understanding. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm thinking if I've heard something that between the Yugas, there's like a overlap period. I don't think it's annihilation. I think it's more it's like a transition phase between the Yugas. Yeah, but not exactly annihilation.
And you mentioned the end of the Kali
Yuga,
what's on the earth is on the creation, it's not for creation. It's on the end of the Brahma.
Okay.
There is a creation.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Here,
it's everything on the earth, but on the earth
itself. Mm-hmm. So Kalki destroys everything on the earth, but it's not the whole universe of creation that's destroyed. Yeah. That happens at the end of the day of the month. Anyone else? Yeah. I agree.
We was John, and he was strong when he was small.
Who? Krishna?
No, Bhima, or he was
Bhima.
Yeah, he or he was only strong when he was big.
Okay. Now the question is, was Bhima one of the Pandavas? Was he strong when he was young, or was he only strong when he grew up? That's all.
Was he strong when he was bigger?
I don't know, like, Mahabharata very well. Don't ask me questions about Mahabharata. I don't really know very well. Guru Chandra might be able to tell. Anyone have an answer to that? It's got an answer to his own question. What's the answer? Do you have what's the answer, Krishna? Okay. Krishna thinks Bhima was strong even when he was small.
Because in the
Kauravas,
he used to climb
up. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's that pastime. Yeah, I think that's good evidence. Backing up your research. So, the pastime, Krishna's saying, is the pastime where when Bhima was small, yes, this was when Bhima was small. At least not growing up. That he grew up in the family of the Kauravas, because the five Pandavas, their father, Pandu, passed away when they were small. So they grew up with their, I guess, cousins, the sons of Dhritarashtra, and they would play together, and Bhima would shake a tree when the sons of Dhritarashtra were in the tree. Shake the tree, and they'd all fall out and break their arms and legs, isn't it? So it must have been pretty strong when he was small to shake the tree. Yeah. Second question, too. That's a question.
When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he knew his devotees were enjoying the temple. He wanted to enjoy like them. He wanted to see. He took the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he took the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the devotees are always dancing and enjoying. But when he took, he was dancing, but he was also serious, and he was also studying. And then he was also serious, not always enjoying. Then afterwards, then he was like a madman dancing on the streets. Why was he all his life? Why wasn't he being mad and dancing?
Okay.
Because all the devotees were dancing and always dancing and being happy.
Okay. So the question is, in Lord Chaitanya's incarnation, Krishna came to experience the enjoyment of being servant of Krishna. Why didn't Lord Chaitanya, sometimes he was serious, he was Nimai Pandit, he was studying a lot, and then later at the end of his life, he became like a madman and was dancing and chanting incessantly. So why didn't he sing and dance his whole life? Is that the question? Yeah. So spiritual enjoyment is not just chanting and dancing, but that's the outward expression of spiritual happiness. When we feel spiritual happiness, Krishna's merciful, gives us some taste, then naturally we want to sing and dance and go around and tell others about Krishna. So that's just an outward expression, but the devotee is always happy from within. It says in Bhagavad Gita, what's that verse in chapter 5, that the self-realized yogis are always enjoying pleasure from within and satisfied from within. And there's also pastime with Srila Prabhupada that He always looked very great, you know what great means? Like serious. So he always looked very serious. And one reporter, you know, asked him, like, well, you look very serious, Prabhupada. Like, why, you know, why are you always, like, happy? It's not to your question. And Prabhupada was running with a big grin, big smile on his face, big, and to show that inside, actually, he was very happy, but he wasn't showing it on the surface of his consciousness, on the surface of his face. So, Lord Chaitanya was always, not one moment he wasn't in divine ecstasy. But, it's not always visible to our eyes. We can't always see what a devotee is feeling, their emotions inside. They don't always show that. So, and we shouldn't either. If you become, we advance more into devotional service and we're experiencing spiritual happiness, thinking about Krishna, then, Bhagavatam describes that we will become like madmen. We want to sing and dance crazily in ecstasy, but devotees shouldn't exhibit that kind of sentiments and emotions and feelings, because your school friends wouldn't understand if you started rolling on the ground in the classroom. They would think, who is this crazy Hare Krishna? So if you're feeling very happy chanting Hare Krishna, then just keep it for the temple. Yes, Hare. One more question.
How? What is the meaning of Supreme Personality of Godhead?
The meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's nice. Because we say that a lot, you know. Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, if you look at each word, Supreme means there's no one greater, no one equal to. Because if you had equal to, if someone was equal to Krishna, like, then there's no meaning to Supreme. So it can't be equal to, and can't be above Krishna. And personality means Krishna is a person. He's not, he's not just energy. And Godhead, personality of Godhead. Well, Godhead, this word is not there very much in the West. People just have to talk about God. We talk about Godhead, means there's unlimited forms, like we're talking today, unlimited forms of God. And out of all those forms of God, Krishna is the Supreme Personality. You know, they're all God. Lord Vishnudeva is God, and Hare Gregory is God, and Hayagriva and Matsya and Korma, all the incarnations, they're all God. They're all fully powerful. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality, even amongst all of those Supreme Personalities. Yeah. Thank you very much, Grantraj. Sorry, that was the last question.
Why does Krishna surrender to Radharani?
Why does Krishna surrender to Radharani? Beyond my realization. So, end there. Thank you very much. Grand Raj, Shri Mataji.